This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. You hear the beeping? At last count, there are now 16 confirmed cases of coronavirus, or COVID-19, in LA County, one of whom may be the first community spread case in the area. A far cry, obviously, from the number of infections in places such as China, Italy, you just heard about, South Korea. But even so, the pandemic has become a constant source of anxiety for many residents all across Southern California, which was on full display over the weekend at Costco in Sherman Oaks. There's been a rush on bottled water, toilet paper, paper towels, disinfecting wipes. Notices written haphazardly on cardboard tell shoppers to come back another day, or they say to take one package per customer. It's all too frustrating for Heather Iger.
I'm running out of it, you know. It's just like, I just, it's ridiculous. I'm very disappointed. Plus, I heard on the news that people are buying like 20 rolls of toilet paper or, you know, buying stuff that other people need. You know, they're just going crazy.
And Norma Pineda and her mother finished their shopping run over the weekend with about a dozen single bottles of water. Costco itself had cut off sales of bottled water. So Pineda, who has four young children, bought them from the food court vendors.
Sí, problema por la escasez de las cosas. No hay papel de baño, no hay...
It's a problem, she says, because there's no toilet paper, there aren't any disinfecting wipes, and when she came last week, the same thing. No water, no hand sanitizer, no wipes, no Lysol. With all this uncertainty, KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb went out looking for answers. How worried should you be? What can you do to protect yourself from the coronavirus? And what do you do if you think you might have it? And he joins me in the studio right now. Benjamin, hi.
Hello, Steve.
So run on supplies, obviously at some stores. You just heard about the fear and the frustration. I want to start with this, though, Benjamin. What can you do to protect yourself from catching COVID-19?
Well, that is the question, isn't it, Steve? And it's on a lot of people's minds right now all across Southern California. And to answer it, I sat down with an expert.
My name's Martin Chinever, and I'm an emergency medicine physician at Santa Monica UCLA Medical Center.
Martin and I caught up at his house in Sherman Oaks, and I asked him for some of his tips.
Wash your hands with soap and water, especially after touching any surface that's available to the common public. You don't need to wear a mask. Avoid touching your face after you've touched common surfaces. And stay home if you're sick.
It's that simple.
It's that simple.
Now, in a briefing today, Steve, LA County public health officials issued a new directive. So people with compromised immune systems, the elderly, and also pregnant women should practice what's called social distancing. That basically means those that are at high risk, those categories I just named, they should stay away from other people, especially in large crowds, also at schools, work, or big events.
But Benjamin, how do you explain things that we're seeing at places like Costco, like the bottled water being completely sold out, or the toilet paper, medical masks being sold out all around town?
Yeah, I asked Dr. Chinever about that, and here's his take.
Right, again, I think that's relates to just the sense of panic that people have. They want to do something, and because there's not a lot you can do here other than common sense measures that I've already talked about, one thing you can do is go out and stock up on supplies, and it gives people a sense of accomplishment. That's the only way I can explain that.
And Steve, his explanation is an informed one. As an ER doctor, he's not just dealing with broken bones or trauma or those types of things. What people may not realize, he says, is that a lot of being a medical professional includes dealing with people's anxieties about being sick or being injured.
But I want to get back to the toilet paper and the paper towels as well, sure. Because obviously you were in the parking lot at Costco, right? You were there. Did you see people stocking up because they're worried that they might have to quarantine themselves at home? They're just really getting enough supplies for home.
Well, sure. I mean, no one I saw was actually buying toilet paper because there wasn't any toilet paper.
That means a lot of people before them came
sure.
And
exactly.
Yeah, got rid of the toilet paper.
I did see folks rolling out with several tubs of dishwashing soap, which I thought was kind of odd. Maybe trying to keep things clean. I don't know. Just trying to do something, but I'm not exactly sure what the psychology is.
But there is some psychology for sure.
Sure.
What do you do then if you think you have coronavirus?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends. It depends on your age, if you're elderly, for example, whether or not your immune system is compromised, like I brought up earlier. But for the vast majority of folks, here's Dr. Chinever's advice.
So if you have a fever and a cough or any other signs of mild respiratory illness, the first thing to do is to stay home. Take care of yourself. take some Tylenol or Motrin, stay hydrated, don't go out in crowds, don't go to work, avoid intimate contact with the members in your house. If you feel that you're seriously ill, for example, you're short of breath, you're extremely weak, any other signs of more severe illness, you should seek medical attention. However, I would say before you go to an emergency room or your doctor's office, it would be prudent first to give them a call and let them know that you're coming in to make sure that there's procedures in place to take care of you.
And that's a big concern, especially if you ask local health officials about are medical professionals becoming sick. I mean, there's always a concern, for example, if there's a bad flu. Dr. Chenever says they go through this a lot, but that's why you should be selective about going to the doctor, he says. Also, not wanting to overwhelm the system. There may be folks who really need to see the doctor. But the vast majority of folks who catch this, if you catch it, you won't need to go to the doctor necessarily. Public health officials today are saying that people with underlying health conditions, as I mentioned earlier, they should practice this social distancing.
Social distancing. And yeah, I mean, we all like, sometimes we're home and we don't feel well, right? We don't know what we have. It could be the flu, it could be bronchitis, respiratory, something like that. You just stay home and sometimes you don't go to the doctor, right? If you, especially if you know you have a healthy immune system.
That's right. There's lots of respiratory illnesses out there. This is just one of them.
There have been reports, Benjamin, of people who believe they have coronavirus. Their doctors agree, but then they haven't been able to get tested to know that fact for sure. Any update on why that's happening?
Yeah, so there's been lots of worry that there are not enough tests, right? You've maybe heard about this or seen it in the news, but really the problem has been a lack of tests. Not necessarily that, but also not enough places to test them. Here's Barbara Ferrer. She's the head of the county's health department.
I think this is where there's a source of confusion. Providers don't test. A hospital doesn't test, a clinic isn't testing, but what they are doing is collecting lab specimens. And up till now, the only place in LA was to send them to our lab.
So in other words, there was only one place, one lab, going over these test kits in all of LA County. That was the health department's. And that meant the department had to prioritize which tests to give out, which to examine. That's slowly changing. Two private medical testing companies are now picking up some of that slack, and that should make it easier to get tests and also get results back.
I know there had been some confusion of how many tests are out there, and if they put it in one place, obviously there's a finite number of tests, so not everyone can get one, but that's where the tests are.
That's right.
Yeah. What about outreach to the community, like other language-speaking communities, the Korean community, the Filipino community, whatever community we're talking about here?
Yeah, it's a good question. At the Friday briefing from the LA County Public Health Department, this was the first public briefing, there was only a briefing in English. That changed today. We saw people offered up from the public health department speaking Spanish, Chinese, and Korean. So they are trying to make an effort to expand their outreach and their messaging to other communities.
The virus obviously is contagious. We know that with contagious diseases, that there's not a lot that can be done to prevent the spread, or at least to contain it. The best defense is often a vaccine. This is how you take care of it, right? How far are we away from that?
Well, scientists from around the world are working on that right now. There's a ton of production already in countries all around the world, including in the U.S. And get this, doctors are starting to inject at least one of these vaccines into people very soon, within the next few weeks or so, to see if it is safe. But that does not mean, Steve, that you and I will be able to get it. In fact, we're still about a year to a year and a half away from that point. And the reason is because when you make a whole new vaccine like this, you've got to make sure it's safe, and that takes a lot of time. Now, you might be thinking a year, year and a half, that's way too long. But Dr. Chenever says he's not too concerned about how long that might take.
For the swine flu several years ago, a vaccine eventually was developed. By the time it was developed, the epidemic had petered out. So we don't know where this is going to go. That being said, if this COVID-19 virus sticks around for months and years, yes, vaccine will be extremely important. That takes time.
So in the meantime, Benjamin, what do you do? Do you stay home? Do you cancel your travel plans? What do you do?
Well, it's really a personal choice, although we have seen some big events canceled, South by Southwest, for example, the Indian Wells Tennis Tournament, to name a few. As for Dr. Chenever, he tells me he's made some new travel arrangements, so he's not necessarily too concerned.
He's taking advantage because there are, believe it or not, because so many people are canceling, the airlines are saying, hey, we got to get people on these aircraft. Let's make it cheap.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. And of course, if you're planning a trip, make sure you stay up to date. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's list of countries to avoid, it's on their website, right? CDC.gov. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb with those practical coronavirus tips. You can check out our website, by the way, KCRW.com/GreaterLA. Benjamin, as always, thanks.
Anytime, Steve.
All right, coming up, the fight for higher pay for teachers assistants at UC schools is spreading across state campuses. You're going to hear the latest next on KCRW's Greater LA.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis, and in non-coronavirus news, it began back in December with what was called a grading strike at UC Santa Cruz. Hundreds of teachers' assistants were pushing for more money there to keep up with inflation. The school gave them an ultimatum, but more than 70 TAs held firm and wound up walking out altogether. Well, then UC Santa Cruz fired those assistants and told dozens of other ones that they wouldn't be eligible for any more work at the school. In recent weeks, TAs at other UC campuses began showing their support for their fellow grad student employees with rallies and demonstrations. This was at UCLA last week. What do we want? COLA, cost of living adjustment. When do we want it? Now. And they are demanding those cost of living adjustments for employees of the UC system. Hannah Carlin is a grad worker at UCLA.
I mean, we're in the fight of our lives here. We are going up against an incredibly regressive administration that is trying everything that it can to suppress its workers and to disempower its workers. And we are committed to doing whatever we can do in solidarity to help get justice for those folks in Santa Cruz.
She says nearly 100 of her grad worker colleagues voted to go on a full wildcat strike, which is a strike that's not sanctioned by the union that represents those workers in solidarity with those fired UC Santa Cruz workers. Nina Agrawal has been reporting on this story for the LA Times, and she's with us right now. Hi, Nina.
Hi there.
What's at the heart of all of this? Is this just about money?
Not entirely. It's really about a cost of living adjustment for workers at UC Santa Cruz and elsewhere in the system. And as the UC administrators have responded to those workers' demands, now it's also become about those workers and reinstating those who were dismissed from their positions as TAs.
I know TAs in the UC system are in a union, but the strike is not, as I mentioned, union sanctioned. So does that mean that the TAs are jeopardizing the current union contracts that are out there that they have?
They are, and the UC administrators have made this point, they are in violation of the contract that the UC has with their union, which includes a no strikes clause. So that's why it's called a wildcat strike. And in talking with the graduate students at UC Santa Cruz, where this all began, they said they resorted to a wildcat strike kind of as a last resort because they felt that the contract that was in place through the official union, you know, that the union had not bargained in a way that was addressed their concerns. And, you know, they were hoping for a rent control measure to go through in Santa Cruz, and that didn't work out. And so they felt that they had to go on this wildcat strike to make their demands known and to put pressure on the administration.
What have union representatives been saying about the strike?
You know, they note that it's not authorized by the union. The full union has to vote on a strike, and it would have to be an unfair labor practice related strike because they do have a contract that includes a no strikes clause. That being said, you know, the union has expressed sympathy and support for the workers and, you know, is in agreement about the basic principle that the cost of living adjustment is a necessity.
How is this, Nina? How is it being perceived among all UC employees, like the people who aren't grad students or aren't teachers' assistants, but longtime employees of the UC system? Are they also supportive? Can they do anything?
Well, certainly there are longtime and tenured and other and non-tenured faculty who have expressed support, both at the picket line and now in these letters, where hundreds and hundreds of faculty at different campuses have signed on to letters saying that they commit to not retaliate against students who participate in demonstrations or in strike actions, as well as, you know, calling on the UC to, you know, reinstate the workers, or certainly to demilitarize and reduce the police presence that has been part of the interaction with some of the students who have been on strike.
Students and faculty were demonstrating on the UCLA campus. That's where we heard that tape from earlier in this program. This happened last week. UCLA grad students have declared this plan to strike, this wildcat strike, until they get these cost of living adjustments. But they aren't officially on strike as of right now. So what's going on right now?
They are thinking about taking this to a full teaching strike. Some of the students who were assembled last week got together in a general assembly, and they took a vote, and they decided that if they get the graduate students in at least 10 departments on campus to declare themselves strike ready, then they will move towards a full teaching strike at UCLA. So I think they're not quite there yet. I know Berkeley is kind of in a similar position, and they've, I think as of this morning, got about 9 departments that have declared themselves strike ready. So both here and at Berkeley, they could be moving toward full teaching strikes.
The strike is gaining momentum, as you say, across California, even across the country. Where do we see it going from here?
Well, one of the professors I talked to, she talked about, you know, being in touch with colleagues at other big public universities in other parts of the country. And she said, this is not, while it is very large and certainly gaining momentum in California, the demands and the concerns that are being raised by these graduate students are not unlike those at other major public universities in other parts of the country. And she thought that this could be a movement that really gains momentum elsewhere as well.
Nina Agrawal, who's a staff writer for the LA Times, has been doing a lot of reporting on this. Nina, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Well, straight ahead, a big political shift continues in Orange County, but how far left will the county go? And what are Republicans doing to fight back? You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. Back with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. And now, off to the OC. Orange County is transformed from consistently voting red to now hewing blue. Last week's Super Tuesday vote confirmed that. So as the region shifts politically, there are quite a few moderates who are concerned about whether the blue wave is too blue. It's Monday. Gustavo Arellano is here with KCRW's Orange County Line. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
So the big question last week on Super Tuesday was, would Republicans succeed in their attempts to take back Orange County? Did they? Did they try?
Oh, no. Well, of course they tried. I mean, what you're going to see in the general election, what the nation cares about, of course, is the congressional races that Orange County famously all flipped blue in 2018. So you're going to see big time matchups. So Harley Reid, all the incumbents went on to the general election. They're all going to face off against the Republican opponents. As we talked about last week, the big matches to watch is going to be in northern or northeast Orange County between Gil Cisneros and Young Kim. And then on the coast between Michelle Steele, who's a current supervisor, and Harley Reid. And what's interesting, of course, people are paying attention that both of those women, if they were to win, they'd be the first ever Korean-American women elected to Congress.
Let's talk about that Young Kim Gil Cisneros race. This is a pretty tight one in the 39th. 2 years ago, they faced each other, and Gil Cisneros squeaked out a winner there. It looks like it's going to be the same kind of race this time around.
Oh, yeah, if not more so, if that makes any sense. But what's amazing about that district, I mean, part of it spills over to San Bernardino County and Riverside County, but the bulk of it is in Orange County. And it's as reflective of what Orange County is now demographically as anything. It's about a third Latino, a third white, a third Asian American, historically very Republican district. I mean, you had Ed Royce there for a long, long time before that. And before that, Bill Danmeyer, who was, you know, one of the old school OC conservative Republicans. But in this case now, the Democrats are ahead on registration, just like they are in the rest of Orange County.
You mentioned Harley Ruta. We're also talking about Katie Porter, Mike Levin, the other returning Democrats who beat Republicans a couple of years ago. What do the numbers show us there from Tuesday?
I really think the only competitive races in Orange County are going to be, again, Gil Cisneros versus Young Kim and Harley Ruta versus Michelle Steele. Katie Porter is a national star at this point. Viral clips have come out on The Daily Show and whatnot. So she's fine. Mike Levin, that's a district that also spills over into northern San Diego County. He seems fine as well. And the other one's Lou Correa. That's a shoe-in. Alan Lowenthal, who represents parts of western Orange County but is based in Long Beach, he's going to win as well. So those are not problematic at all on the national scale. But of course, on the local scale now, there's a lot of soul searching within the Democratic Party just because the next generation of Democrats are not going to be as moderate as this current generation of Democrats.
I want to talk a little bit more about local races, not just the congressional races, because last week there were two open seats for Board of Supervisor. Well, let's start with Republican Andrew Doe, who had this big field against him. What happened there?
Andrew Doe's current supervisor easily won, got about 44% of the vote, which means there's a runoff in the general election. What's interesting in that election was that there was three Democrats running, and the favorite was supposed to be Miguel Pulido, the longtime mayor of Santa Ana, who's been in Santa Ana City Hall since 1986. Currently, he's losing to Sergio Contreras, a Westminster City Council member. And that was a clash of generations. They're both relatively moderate, although Contreras is a little bit more liberal. But Miguel Pulido is a baby boomer. Sergio Contreras is a Generation X. And the results haven't been finalized by the Registrar of Voters in Orange County. Right now, there's less than 1,000 votes separating them. So we can't declare it just yet. But if Pulido loses, that's going to be a big upset. One of the longest serving politicians in Orange County right now, he'll be out of a job for the first time since 1986.
Let's shift over to the third district, Gustavo, because Republican Don Wagner was pitted against Democrat Ashley Akin. What happened in that race?
That one was a surprise, just as we predicted last week. Don Wagner easily won against Ashley Akin. Ashley Akin, again, was a federal prosecutor who had never held elected office, had a very prominent last name. Her dad, Wiley Akin, longtime fundraiser and advocate for the Democratic Party of Orange County, but the voters just didn't know who she was. Don Wagner, on the other hand, former state assembly member, former mayor of Irvine, so he gets to serve another 4 years.
Do you think, I mean, you mentioned this idea, the Democrats, that maybe the new Democrats of Orange County are much bluer Democrats or the more progressive ones. Didn't Bernie Sanders beat Joe Biden in Orange County?
Yeah, never in my mind ever did I think a Democratic Socialist would win a presidential primary for the Democratic nomination in Orange County, but Bernie did. That said, he got 35% of the vote, which means 65% of Orange County went with the moderates. Joe Biden was in second place. Michael Bloomberg was in third place. But Sanders's victory really shows to the future, because one of the reasons he won was because the party, or rather his campaign, really connected with grassroots activists who have been fighting in specifically in Santa Ana for years and years and years. So now they're part of that network. And the chair of the Democratic Party, Ada Briceño, she was one of the few prominent Democrats in the entire state to publicly back Bernie Sanders. So if she's in charge of the party and you have all these young people who went with Bernie, really, that shows that the younger Democrats, they want something a little bit more liberal than the Lou Correas of and Loretta Sanchez of yesteryear.
So given the demographics of the Democratic Party, the new Democrats, right, the more progressive ones that you're talking about, do you think this shift is temporary, or do you think this has staying power?
This is going to invigorate them. Already on local levels, you see this progressive wave holding seats on school boards, on slowly but surely on city councils. They're running for these races. In the past, they wouldn't have done anything. They weren't even involved in the party so much because they thought that running for elections and all that was, you know, selling out, kind of like the baby boomers of the 60s. But now they realize, hey, if Bernie has been able to win, if we could win Orange County, then maybe there's hopes for people like us. Let's go. Let's take it over and let's run.
Gustavo Arellano with today's Orange County Line. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, how LA Metro is trying to keep things sanitized on the buses and trains with COVID-19 lurking. Coming up next, it's The Business with Kim Masters, our weather forecast. Oh, man, I get to mention rain. Can you believe it? Increasingly cloudy today. Rain moves into the area, develops late this evening and tonight, especially overnight, with lows in the 50s tonight. Tomorrow's high, upper 50s to low and mid 60s. Good chance of rain for the next few days, 1 inch to 3 inches possible in some spots. We're online, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Rebecca Mooney, Nor Bazidi, Sonia Geis, Christine Comito, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, and Christian Bordahl. Thank you for your help, and thanks for your time and your ears today. Have a great day.